Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Engage to Flourish podcast. This is Damon, and we have a very special guest on this podcast. It's interesting because, you know, earlier this week I was like, oh, I don't have anybody lined up to come on the show this week. I wonder if we're going to have to skip. And then I get a text message from my sister-in-law who says her brother-in-law wants to come on the show. So the Lord lined everything up, and I get to introduce to everyone my sister-in-law's brother-in-law, Samson Tang. Welcome, Samson.
Hey, thanks, Damon. That was a great introduction, and great introduction music, by the way. I really enjoyed it.
All right, well, Samson's visiting from Texas. He and his family live in Texas, and he is a member of the Poon Clan. Okay, it's not the Poon Clan, but...
That's fair. That's how I was going to introduce myself as a member of the Poon Clan. It's a clan at this point.
So there are quite a few of them. And when I was in college, I used to think, like, the Poons are going to take over the world. And, I mean, there are so many in the clan now that, I mean, I guess I'm one of them, too.
We'll take you, yeah.
But I wanted to give Samson a little bit of a chance to introduce himself to our congregation. You know, he is Jonathan Poon's brother-in-law. And, side note, kind of jokingly, Jonathan likes to claim you as his brother-in-law more than he likes to claim me as his brother-in-law. So we can make fun of him a little bit about that. But anyway, Samson, can you introduce yourself to our congregation a little bit?
Yeah, I guess as Damon said, I am Jonathan's brother-in-law. or you can just call me Abby and Eden's uncle. Both are perfectly fine for me. I guess a little bit about myself. I grew up in Texas. I wasn't born there. I was born in Malaysia, but raised in Texas and went overseas to do missions in China. It was there that I met this beautiful young lady named Jody, who's Jonathan's little sister. We didn't hit it off right away. She thought I was weird, and you can ask her later, but it's a funny story. But it took a while, but I eventually grew on her, and when I asked if she wanted to start dating, she said, okay. Eventually, you know, the Lord worked in her heart, and to my benefit, that when I asked her to marry me a year later, she said yes, and almost 14 years, 14 in November, and 4 kids later, here we are.
And one of those kids is pretty young, right?
Yeah. We just had a newborn. He's 2 months old or 10 weeks old. So, Levi Fisher Tang. It took us a while to find a name for him because this is our third son. Mm-hmm. And we were praying and thinking about it. And Jody was like, what about Levi? Levi is the third son. And we're like, yeah, that's pretty cool. And after he was born, actually, the day he was born a month early.
Wow.
It was crazy. Yeah. His due date was March 27th. He was born February 27th, a day before our next youngest son's birthday on the 28th is his birthday. And we had just been recovering from the flu, and I had canceled all. I didn't go to work that day. I called in sick. And then I was going to go lay down for the night, and Jody was like, hey, my water broke.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, all right, here we go. And so, praise the Lord, 12 hours later, 12 or 14, Levi was born, and it was pretty cool. Our midwife came over, and she was there with us at the hospital, and she said, like, you know, I had 3 boys born back to back to back, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Oh my gosh.
And she goes, they were all named Levi. And it's almost like, for her, it was like a confirmation, right? Like 3 things happen, you know, when the Bible says it 3 times, it's like a confirmation. And she was saying, like, this is a sign of God's faithfulness. Like, you weren't expecting it. Like, it's not the plan that you had for the birth of Levi, and it's not what you would have chosen. But this was God's good plan for you guys. And I was like, oh, wow, thank you for that.
Yeah, and then even being a month early, he's totally healthy and able to travel at 10 weeks and come back to California. And
enjoy his ancestral home from his mother's side, the land of sunshines and rainbows, I guess. Oh.
Yeah, so you guys have been living in Texas for a little bit, but then prior to that, you were in China for a while. So can you share a little bit about that experience and you know, what it was like raising your family in China and, you know, just share with our people. Cause you know, I think it's one thing to see and hear from people that go on short-term missions, but you guys were there for years, right? And yeah. So it's cool to hear people's experiences as they've gone on missions and, you know, just seeing the Lord's faithfulness in other countries. And that's one of the things that I really appreciate about, you know, our church family, and then just also the Global Sea Church. Like, when you get a chance to see, like, wow, we serve the same God as people that are serving in China, as people that are serving in Africa, people that are serving in, you know, Europe. Like, it's cool to hear from them and to see, like, wow, our God is so big and he's so faithful that he's, you know, the same God over there that he is over here. And it's cool to hear people's stories. So can you share a little bit about your experience when you guys were in China?
Yeah. Sorry, I'm pausing because it's, you know, we spent a big chunk of our adult lives there. And it was such a wonderful time. We really enjoyed it. Our three kids were born while we were in China. One of them, our daughter, was born in China. And, you know, just seeing the medical system through that was actually, it was pretty interesting. But that's another story. I think the one thing that we really enjoyed and miss about is the community. It's such an Eastern collective community focused culture that going from there to coming to here, where, you know, we live in like a very hyper individualized, like, mm-hmm. I'm the captain of my own ship. It was almost like whiplash. Like, mm-hmm. every time we came back to the States and we would go to the supermarket, there's just so many different options. It was so big. We would like get lost for like 30 minutes. Just like, wow, I forgot about this. And I think just the simplicity of living overseas, there's just something about living overseas that when God strips away the things that you're comfortable with and you just have like, okay, I'm not sure how we're going to do this. I'm just doing life there. You just rely on God in a different way. Mm. I know that sounds very abstract, but there was just something like, it was a privilege. It was a joy to serve overseas. I know people talk about it as a sacrifice, and yeah, there are legitimate things that we really miss, you know, family, the building our 401k, which I don't have 401k, but you know, like just building up that earthly possessions wealth we mm-hmm. didn't really have because we were, you know, living overseas. We would, and it wasn't all easy. It wasn't all like, you know, roses and daisies or whatever. Like we, you know, in our 10 years overseas, we moved like 15 times or wow. so. It was a lot. And I don't think we stayed in one place for more than 2 years. Mm-hmm. So we moved to a lot of different places, had a lot of new teammates, and there were some difficult times. We had, you really, the people you serve with, the people you live with, you get to know them. Like, you see them almost every day. You do community with them. You do church with them. They're your coworkers. So if they have issues, you find out about it, you know about it, and you learn how to do conflict really well. Because if you don't, it's going to be hard. So I grew a lot. I learned a lot. And somebody told me that living overseas, like, it kind of strips away a lot. So God brings out a lot inside of you that you need to deal with and work on. Mm. And so it was a lot of refining for me and for our marriage. And I think it, you know, I'm really grateful. I miss it, but the Lord called us back home. For those that don't know, we were stuck for 2.5 years in LA during the pandemic trying to go back. Like, we would try to, I mean, everybody has a pandemic story, right, Damon? but yeah, for us, the Lord used the pandemic to call us back home. And after 2.5 years of trying to go back overseas, we try to look at other avenues of going back overseas. We explored different countries like Morocco, Vietnam, Thailand, mm-hmm. you know, we both, you know, well, since we were both related, as you're my brother-in-law, Jonathan, we have a brother-in-law and sister-in-law, Joni and Mike, who are in Japan. We thought about, you know, just threw that out there. We never really seriously considered it, but you know, there are different options. We just like threw out, but none of that really seemed like that was where God was leading us. Mm-hmm. So we just felt like, okay, I think God is just leading us to a place where we need to rest. And so after some praying consideration, you know, we have a place in Texas that I grew up in. We have a home church here, but we also had a home church in Texas. So that just seemed like a good landing spot to see what God would do. And we, in June of 2022, we ended service with our organization. In October of 2022, moved back to Texas. And even that was pretty cool because we were in Texas. There was like 6 months of, hey, I'm not going to work. Like, I'm just going to rest, transition. Mm-hmm. God provided through our support an organization that we had 6 months of allowance that we could live off, that we didn't have to worry about getting a job. And by the time in January, I'm like backtracking my story. So we got there in October, and around December, I start looking for jobs, and I had one or two job offers to be an ESL teacher, to work for a school, because, you know, we were teaching English in China. That was my background. Mm-hmm. And I thought it would be cool to be a teacher there in Texas. I always wanted to be a coach. but I got an offer to work for Catholic Charities, and another opportunity came up to work for a school, but it didn't feel right. And then around January, our pastor said, "Hey, do you want to come on and be the college pastor at our church?" Mm. And after some praying about it, I was like, okay, maybe this is what God has for us. And so started our church at Grace Community Church in Arlington, Texas. Can I give a shout out to my church?
Yeah, go for it. We love shout outs.
So yeah, shout out to my church. Our senior pastor, Gary Hutchinson, he's a good guy. We're not related to John MacArthur's church at all. Not that we have anything against him. We're a little bit more charismatic. So if you guys ever have time in Arlington, Texas or Dallas area, let us know. Our website is gracearlington.com. So if you ever want, if you ever visit, let us know. Love to have you. Knowing the demographic of Catalyst, if you guys come, you'd help probably double our Asian American population in church. So I did college ministry for a year and a half. And that was really, really cool to see. And I did it at my alumni at the school that I graduate from, mm-hmm. UT Arlington. And I saw some of the campus leaders there. I knew from when I was in college, we were in the same campus ministry. And when I left for China, they just kept serving there. Our friends were, our kids became friends, got connected, same homeschool co-op. God gave us community. Mm-hmm. And about a year and a half later, my senior pastor, after a meeting, said, "Hey, Samson, can you stay? I need to talk to you about something." And my first thought was like, "Oh, I'm in trouble."
Isn't that everyone's first thought?
I know, right? When a senior pastor is like, "Hey, I need to talk to you." Yeah, it's like, "Oh, no, the principal wants to talk to me." So what had been going on in our church after a year, the guy that brought me on left to do take another job in Seattle. And that opened up some positions. So some things got moved around, and the life group pastor position was open. Mm. No one was a life group pastor at the time. And so my wife, Jody, and I, we've always had a heart for family ministry. Mm-hmm. And that came from when we first got married during ministry in China. A lot of the believers in China were first, second generation believers, to where they're like, okay, I'm a believer. My wife is a believer. How do we raise our kids and do marriage and ministry as believers in mm-hmm. this culture? And so we had a heart for discipling, you know, first generation, second generation believers on what it looks like to have a biblical marriage in a Chinese culture. Not an Americanized marriage, but a Christian marriage mm-hmm. with a Chinese context.
Yeah.
And so that was our heart. And so that grew into family ministry and helping believers disciple their kids. And it's still something that's very strong in hearts. And so when we got to our church, we saw that there wasn't a lot of like community events for families to get to know each other. Mm-hmm. And so we started doing that when I was a college pastor. But then when the life group position opened up, my wife asked me, like, "Don't you think like you should take over the life group pastor?" And with that, because, you know, one of the purposes of the life group is community.
Yeah.
Right. Like in a medium-sized, larger church, about, you know, 600, our congregation is about 600. It's easy to get lost. Yep. One of the best ways to get plugged in is through a life group, because you can't know all 600 people really deeply, but you can know 20, mm-hmm. you can know 10, you can pray and support 10.
And you can walk together with them, really. Yeah. That's what life groups is for, right? It's just to be able to walk together and have a closer knit group that you can walk and do life together.
Exactly.
As opposed to feeling like, okay, I'm just one person in this 600 person church. It's like, oh, yeah. These are the people that I'm actually going to be walking with. And, mm-hmm. you know, I could share my struggles with, I could share my joys and highlights with, but really people that we can more closely walk with.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, one of the benefits is community. Mm-hmm. And so we had been starting these community events for families to get together, to know, to connect. And from those connections start like having this vision of walking and doing life together, mm-hmm. you know, because our kids would go to Sunday school and they would become friends with their kids, and we would hear about their kids, and like, these are the kids that they're friends with, but we never met the parents. Or we would see a family that we got connected with at church, and we say, hey, do you know this family at our church? And they said, no, I've never met them. And so we're like, okay, how can we change that? How can we bring more connectivity in our church? And so Jody said, I think you should think about that. I think that's what God wants for you. But I'd only been doing college ministry for about a year. And I felt very strongly about, you know, like, hey, if I'm going to do college ministry, I want to kind of see it through. I want to build it up and not leave it worse than before. The college ministry had gone through a lot of, you know, the pandemic. The college pastor had some health issues, was on sabbatical for a year. The replacement college pastor, his wife passed.
Oh, wow.
So it had been like back to back. Our college ministry was just not very stable. And so I, for a year and a half, had been building it up, discipling my leaders. And I, in my head, I was like, I want to do 4 years. I want to see the freshman group graduate before I move on. I don't know why I had 4 years, but it just seemed, you know, it just made sense to me.
Yeah, and it just brings a level of stability, right? Because then you can set the culture, you could set the tone. And then, you know, at that time, the seniors that you started with as freshmen have now come through, and now they're able to start discipling the younger kids. So then you're starting more of like a cycle of, you know, sustainability, as opposed to just like, I'm in and out, and then didn't really develop a lot.
Yeah, yeah. So, oops. Sorry. So Jody asked me, you know, the million-dollar question. It's like, what would it take for God to change your mind? And I was like, well, if our senior pastor comes up to me and asks me to consider moving, then I would feel like it was a sign from God. And so Jody was like, okay. She texts her senior pastor. It was like, hey. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding, Jody, if you're listening to this later.
I mean, you almost got me there. I was like leaning on it. I was like, oh, shoot, Jody actually went to that.
No. She just prayed. She just prayed. And, you know, God listens to her, I guess. That's awesome. But yeah, I think it was like a month later that's when he came up to me and asked, had the conversation, hey, can I talk to you after this? And I was like, oh, no, I'm in trouble. And he said, I want you to pray about taking over life groups. And if you do, you and Jody can do your family ministry events that you guys have been doing. So he didn't just initiate. He initiated and spoke straight into our heart and kind of like our vision of why we would take over. And so, you know, with that confirmation, I was like, let me think about it. And yeah, after some prayer, and, you know, I had some hesitation, but I realized after some time to just reflect that my hesitation was more on fear. You know, I hadn't been in like that big of a position before, and I had this fear of failure, fear of what people would think about me. And, you know, I realized that, man, that wasn't from the Lord. You know, like if the Lord, what the Lord gives me, only he can take away. And if he takes it away, then it's on him. You know, I can only do my best and trust the results to him.
Yeah. We can only control what we can control, right? And some of those things, like what other people think, like we can't control that, right? So.
Yeah. I mean, that's a ministry trap, right? Like there's so much of, in ministry, you want to, you know, give the best, you know, everything's an act of worship. You want to do your best in everything. You want to give, you know, grade A performances. You don't want to come before the congregation and be like, oh, no, I don't know what I'm talking about. Or on the worship team, like, you know, you don't want to come and be unprepared and let that be a distraction. But it's easy to think that your preparation leads directly to results when the results are on the Lord. So that was something that I was like, okay, I'm sorry, Lord, for my pride in thinking that I could determine the results.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think, man, you just said so many different things that were highlighted to me. I was like, oh, I want to touch on that. I want to touch on that. I want to touch on that. But I think it's cool just to see like the Lord's hand in your journey too. And then you recognizing like the ways that the Lord is kind of leading you to different places and where he's placed you right now. I think one of the things that I really wanted to talk about, because I think this is something that, you know, as our church has gone through a series on the serving challenge earlier this year and serving and things like that. And, you know, one of the things that you talked about was what during your time in China and, you know, going overseas and being a longer term missionary, like people talk about it in terms of sacrifice, but then you know, your perspective wasn't on sacrifice, but you were more like grateful for the opportunity, and you were thankful for, you know, the way that the Lord had placed you there. So can you share a little bit about, like, where did that perspective and where did that mindset come from? Because like you said, I think there are quite a few people who think of, you know, like, oh, it's going to be such a sacrifice. It's going to be it's going to be difficult, which, you know, there, like you said, there are difficult times, but your perspective, I feel like that's something that is unique, and it's like, oh, I want to hear more about that. So where do you feel like that perspective came from, and, you know, kind of shifting it from like, this is going to be sacrifice to being, you know, like, I think you said, the words you said was, it was your pleasure to be over there. So.
Yeah. It was, I guess a privilege. I think one that comes down from being supported, mm-hmm. you know, to be open, like, we were financially supported by people here, and that, you know, I could have, after graduated, gotten a 9-to-5 job, mm-hmm. and done that, but the Lord allowed us to live overseas and do what we do, and we were supported by people who really did sacrifice, mm-hmm. you know, that their $50 a month was maybe, you know, like, that was a dinner out for their family, mm-hmm. that they gave up so that we could take a student out for dinner and share the gospel with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was always on the forefront of our minds of, like, man, what we do here, we're not here on our own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously the Lord sent us, but being on support made that really real. And so we got to enjoy a lot of special moments.
Mm-hmm.
We got to travel, got to see a lot of people. I mean, by the time our oldest son is 11, but before he was 2, he hadn't been to so many of, like, the world's major cities, Beijing, Shanghai, Singapore, Tokyo, New York, you know, LA, Kuala Lumpur, all before he was 2, you know, and that was like, that's not a common 2-year-old experience.
Mm-hmm.
And what we were experiencing was not common. And we could just see the Lord's hand work in so many different places, meet so many amazing people overseas, see the Lord work in amazing ways. And the president of our organization liked to say that, you know, when you serve for a year, you're ruined for the ordinary.
Mm.
You know, like the ordinary life is not going to be pleasing anymore. And, you know, again, I'm not trying to knock anybody that is working here 9-to-5 and faithfully supporting. Like, that's good. And we need people like that in the church. Like, as missionaries, we're not able to do what we do unless we have the church,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the church is supported. And I saw the both and in that. And so, yeah, I think it was just that being humbled by people who supported us.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first thing that helped us. And two, I think the privilege of serving with my wife,
mm-hmm.
Doing ministry together, having our life in a certain, like, here in America, we tend to compartmentalize everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's my work, you know, friends, yep. There's my family life, and then there's my church life. At overseas ministry, it's all blending one. When you mm-hmm. go over as a overseas worker with the purpose of sharing the gospel, everything is all combined. Like, your work life is your ministry. And we lived on campus, and so my wife and I, we would do ministry together. And so it really, we spent a lot of time together. It, mm-hmm. it built up a marriage and a family in a way that would be very different from if we were serving here and I was gone from 9-to-5, she mm-hmm. was gone from 9-to-5, we'd come back, talk about our days. And, you know, we face that tension now that I'm on staff at church. But that really gave us this unique marriage,
mm-hmm.
That I feel that most people really don't get an opportunity to have here, when both the husband and the wife are working and gone for big parts of the day from each other.
Mm-hmm.
So we were blessed for that, for sure.
Yeah, and I think one thing that I really respect you for too, Samson, is that, you know, you weren't just solely relying on support during your time there, because you were working too. You were teaching English and things like that too. So you were tent maker at the same time as you know. So I was like, wow, like, just really the way that you were diligently like, okay, this is another opportunity for me to, one, like, bring in more funds, but then also be able to, you know, serve the students and do that. It's like, oh, this is like, I really respect you for that.
Well, you know, praise God, and I think that just came from being a young person, like growing up. It's easy to see, like, okay, this is my real ministry.
Mm-hmm.
But our organization was really focused on teaching,
mm-hmm.
and on doing ministry through your teaching,
mm-hmm.
and having a unified, a holistic perspective on ministry, and that I mean that discipled me in a good way.
Yeah, and I think that's something, you know, that's one of the reasons that our church started our company, Ahava, which we recently, you know, closed down. But that was one of the things that we wanted to do in our company, was to be able to help people to recognize, like, our faith and our work can be in one place. It doesn't have to be, you know, like you said, my faith is at church on Sunday, and my work is this totally different thing. But it's a place where we can, you know, walk together, we can, you know, go through our faith together, our faith journey with the Lord together. You know, we can stop and pray for each other if we're going through something difficult, you know, things like that. And so I feel like our hearts are aligned in that way. You know, it's really like the Lord is with us all the time, whether we're at church or we're at work or whatever. And so how are we living out our faith in all of these different arenas? And that's something that we wanted to do in our company Ahava, and something that, you know, it was a value for you during your time too.
How is for Catalyst? I think last time when we talked, you were saying that there. Sorry, you talking about Ahava just reminded me of the different overseas projects you guys were part of. How is that going? Are you guys still involved with? I guess last time you guys were doing hydroponics in Southeast Asia or something in Africa.
Yeah. So the hydroponics in Southeast Asia, that kind of shifted a little bit. The Lord had some different ideas on how for them to generate some income. So that kind of moved around a little bit. So I don't think they're doing that anymore. I don't think that ended up getting off the ground the way that we anticipated it getting off the ground. But the Lord had different things in mind. And that one's kind of a crazy story too, but it's too long to talk about on the podcast. But I guess if anybody wants to hear more about that, I guess they could come talk to me. but we are still partnering with a team in, or not a team, with some people in Mozambique. Mm. And so, you know, for those that have been faithful listeners to the podcast, you know, a few of us, including myself, Kyle, Pastor Barry, got a chance to go to Mozambique in 2024 and partner with them and see some of the things that kind of the literally and figuratively fruit of our labor.
Yeah.
Because, you know, one of the ways that we've been supporting them in Mozambique is we've helped to fund, the creation of a farm.
Oh, cool.
And it's a pineapple farm. And, I will never forget the look on Pastor Barry's face when we drove up to the pineapple farm, because he'd been there 10 years before when he went to Mozambique. And, you know, it was a growing farm. It was smaller at the time. And over the years, our church has, you know, contributed to, like, building a well and doing things like that.
Yeah.
But just the look on Pastor Barry's face when we drove up this time, because the farm had grown tremendously. So he just had this look of, like, awe and wonder on his face as we were driving up, just because of how much work they'd done and how much it had grown. It was like, whoa, like I didn't real, you know, to me driving up, it's like, oh, this is really cool. But to see like Pastor Barry's look, like, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, wow, this is like, it's incredible for me as someone, this is my first time.
Yeah.
But for someone that had been there and to see like his face, I was like, wow, this is like amazing.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's cool because some of the different people that we've been partnering with overseas, you know, they're looking for ways to become more sustainable themselves as well. And so it's not just like, okay, we're supporting them to just help them in their ministry. It's like, that's true. We are doing that, but then we're also helping to support them in different projects that they're doing so that they can be more sustainable and they can grow their ministries, you know, on their own too.
Right.
So I think those types of things are pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely, really, I think sometimes when we look at like gospel impact, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, when the gospel enters a community, it doesn't just change the hearts, but it also impacts the people materially, physically as well,
mm-hmm.
you know, because through that spiritual impact of the gospel, it comes and changes the community. I mean, we saw that with, you know, the early church, when the early church started growing, orphanages were built, hospitals were created. You know, the first universities were seminaries, you mm-hmm. know, because of the spreading of the gospel. So, yeah, that's pretty cool. So are you guys doing anything else, you know, locally as well for as Catalyst? Like, do y'all do short-term mission trips where you take congregation over to Mexico or to...
Yeah, so we've done some things like that in the past. We did house building in Mexico. Last year, we sent a team of our youth and college age to Japan, and they did some missions work in Japan. That was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
So yeah, it was a good opportunity for our high schoolers to be able to go over to Japan and do some teaching English and working with a church over there. So that trip was about a month.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we've been trying to see different ways that we can continue that relationship with that church and things like that. And, you know, as we moved into our new facility, I think that's one of the things that we're trying to explore, just different ways that we can impact the community now that we have a more permanent facility that we have full access to. Because, you know, when we were out of school, it's a little bit different and we had a little bit less, significantly less access to, right, when you're only there on a Sunday morning from, you know, 9 to 12 or whatever.
When it's a rental property, basically. Yeah.
So now that we have our own facility, you know, just trying to see different ways that we can utilize it. And it's cool because now I think we were looking at some of the just different activities that are starting to go on. And it's like, wow, like we're starting to fill up our calendar a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's cool just to see the ways that, you know, the Lord is growing in people's hearts to whether it's serve the community or, you know, just be a light. You know, and I think that's really one of the things that has been a focus for us is like, what does it look like to be a city on a hill?
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of interesting that, you know, the Lord gave us a property that's on the second story, right? So it's
cool.
Kind of like our own little hill, right? But I think that's one of the things that it's the calling of our church is to be that city on a hill. So what does that look like for us to be the city on a hill? And really it's to impact the community, right? And so just trying to find different ways because it is a new season for us. It's been a new season for us as we've been in our new facility.
Yeah. How long have you guys been there? Like a year?
Just a little bit over a year. So beginning of 2025 is when we moved in.
Okay. I'm curious. So doing ministry as a missionary to being a pastor in a church, and you know, it's not good or bad. It's almost like a startup mm-hmm. where everything's just like growth. And then to being more established where it's like maintaining some things mm-hmm. and that tension of like growth and maintenance. Mm-hmm. So like being on staff that, you know, our church has our own building. When we have staff meetings, I feel like sometimes a disproportionate amount of time is spent talking about maintaining the church building or talking about rules. And I mean, you know, it's good. I'm not saying it's not. It's just been a shift for me and there's like, you know, I see for some pastors who are more administrative, mm-hmm. A book I read is called The Trellis and the Vine. Mm-hmm. And you know, just about like ministry fruit, the vines, but how they need infrastructure, the trellis to grow on.
Yeah.
And so it's been interesting to see on our staff, there's like, you know, trellis focused people on like, hey, we got to make sure that the infrastructure is good mm-hmm. and how some people are more focused on the vine. And that tension of, you know, because if it's just too much focus on the structure, you know, AKA the building, mm-hmm. then it's basically just pieces of wood. Mm-hmm. Like it's dead. There's no life. But for the fruit to flourish and grow, you do need some structure to build so that it can flourish. Mm-hmm. So I guess going from, you know, my question is going from having your own building now, have you seen that a little bit more, that shift, that tension? Has that happened yet where like, okay, you know, we have our own building now. How do we take care of it? These are some rules. Has that come up?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting that you're asking that question because, you know, our experience was a little bit, I guess it's more lined up with your personal experience, right? Because for the beginning of our church, we were very focused on the vine, right? The life of our church, our people. And it was awesome just to see lives transformed and people growing in their faith and everything. But, you know, now we have our own facility. There have been more administrative needs. And we feel like the Lord has been kind of leading us in that direction. But one of the things that keeps coming up is like, we can't forget where we came from, right? So we can't forget the heart of our church, right? So like, kind of like you said, if you focus too much on the structure, it's just wood,
right?
Right. And so I think that's been something that's been good for us is this, you know, kind of as a staff, that's been something that's been on the forefront of our mind is that, you know, as we continue to build in some of this infrastructure, it's necessary for us to be able to grow, right? Like you go from being a small church that rents a facility to now having our own facility, having more events, having more things. Like there does need to be more infrastructure and things like that. Just so that things run smoothly, right? Because you don't want to have five events on the same day and everybody's fighting at the last minute over who's going to use the space, right? So there does need to be some administrative action and things like that. But at the same time, it's like we can't step into those things and forget about the heart of our church and why we're doing things and who we're walking with and the people, right? And so I think that's been something that the Lord has really been reminding us of. And I do feel like, you know, especially at the beginning, it's like, what is this going to look like as we start to add some of these things? But just the Lord's grace has been, you know, directing us in a really, I feel like it's been a really healthy way to, yes, we do need to add some administrative things, some infrastructure, but we're not going to forget who we are.
Yeah.
And, you know, really that starts with Pastor Barry. It's like his heart for our people, his heart for the Lord. It's really just something that just trickles down to the rest of the staff and then to the rest of our congregation that it's like, really, it's, you know, it is about the people and the infrastructure is to serve the people and not just infrastructure to build the infrastructure or to maintain the infrastructure, right? So.
Yeah. It's not the angle, it's a tool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So on a personal question, like, do you feel like you're more administratively leaning or are you more people leaning?
Okay. So I personally, I can do administrative stuff, by training, but I think just I'm more naturally lean against the administrative stuff. But you know, just in the different roles that I've had, it comes with different levels of administration. But I think personally, I lean more towards, just more towards people and things like that.
Okay.
So yeah, you don't. I mean, I guess Samson could take a look to his right and look at my desk and see like, oh yeah, this guy's not a super organized guy.
No. You should check out my office. And when you visit, you can see my office. It's definitely an office that says like kids are here. Like, kids play here.
I think another thing that I think it would be cool for us to talk a little bit about is this, you know, I think it's just interesting the timing of us recording this episode because last week we had our children's director come on and, you know, one of the things that we were talking about was kind of the direction for our children's ministry and our family ministries and things like that. And it's really cool because I feel like our hearts are aligned with some of the things that you've been talking about and really, you know, things like how do we help our people to, you know, raise their kids in a Christian household.
Yeah.
Right. And what does that look like? Because really, you know, and we have said this over and over and over again, but the stance of our church is that the parents are the main spiritual leaders of their kids, right? And
yeah,
our kids are always looking at us. They're seeing what we do, and they are going to follow our lead, right? And so if what we're teaching in the household or what we're modeling in the household is different than what they're experiencing at church, then where are they going to, you know, where are they going to lean to? They're going to lean to what they experience every day at home. Right.
Yeah.
And so we need to be kind of cognizant of that and recognize like, no, what I do as in my own life, it matters, and how I raise my kids, it matters. And so we can either work together with the church and partner together to say like, we're all on the same team and we're going to lead our kids to the Lord. Or if our lifestyle is very different than that, then they're just going to follow us, right? And so it's cool to see the ways that you're trying to disciple people and help people to raise their kids. And I just wanted us to have a little bit more conversation on that because I think it's cool and I think it's really encouraging, like I said, to hear other people's perspective that are outside and to see like, oh, this is what they're doing or this is how they're leading their congregation or this is some of the things that the Lord's been putting on their heart, especially for families. So Can you share a little bit more about?
Yeah. I guess one, what the Lord's been putting in my heart for families and kids. I've been collaborating, working closely with our youth pastor, you know, one thing that we both have been just seeing and noticing as and I don't want to say issue, but is the whole role of AI and technology in our kids' lives. I mean, I'm sure everybody sees that too, right? So a book that I've been reading is called Screens and Teens by Kathy Cook. We are going to do a seminar class on it in our church in June, do a book club on it. Just the idea of obviously how, you know, like there was a visual that my colleague created. It was dots, right? So you have this picture of dots representing your life. Each dot is 2 months of your life. So everybody, if you live to 90, you have a certain number of dots. I don't know how many that is, but 90 years of dots, right? And each dot was color coded with how you spent your life. So, you know, a third of it was yellow for sleep because, you know, you should be sleeping, right? And if you're some of those people that aren't, that's great. You know, some of it was to showering because showers are good. Eating, driving surprisingly is quite high on there. And then free time. Free time was like a third. Right. So those are the white dots, like what you do with your free time. And you know, his point was like, this is kind of where life happens with your family, that free time. This is where, you know, vacations, hobbies, conversations, what we're doing now, or I guess this is kind of workish, right? It's office hours.
Hey, we're double dipping here.
That's true. That's true. Here. I am on vacation though. So. and of those white dots that represent a third of your life, let's say you have 60 dots, then he would mark off 55 of those with red. So 5 white dots remain. And those red dots were how much time you spent on screens. And like I'm saying it now, and it doesn't seem shocking, but when you see it visually, there's like this like impact. When he showed it to our congregation, when he spoke last week at church, he spoke to our congregation and he gave that. And you're like, you're saying out of my life, or at least our kids' lives, that they're going to, out of their free time, essentially 10 months of their lives is going to be screen-free. Everything else is spent on the screen. And that was shocking. And the data, the statistics show that, yeah, this is a major problem. I mean, I don't know which study, but I think like kids, maybe even up to college, spend up to 8 hours a day on screens. On like, you know, just on screens, and that's like social media, TikTok.
Well, I was on that much on screens when I was growing up, and that was just with TV only.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just but you know, like with TV, even then that was different. So the book kind of breaks down how screens are basically discipling our generation, our kids' generation. And again, I like the book because it's not like, it's not doom and gloom. You know, there's some books that you read and it's like, man, you're like, the world's going to end. Nobody's going to have any social skills ever. And
well, especially when it comes to that topic, it feels like a lot of people's perspective on that topic is like, we need to scare everybody to get them to stop. Right. And it's like, okay, it's not scaring people to get them to stop. It's scaring people to get them to not read your book.
Yeah. And so I like this book because she doesn't use scare tactics. She paints a very clear picture. I want to be honest, like it's sobering, you know, for but it's also hopeful. Like one, she says like, yes, technology, you know, has a bad influence, but technology can also be good. You know, she points out like how like being on Facebook and sharing pictures has helped to build relationships with people that don't like with family doesn't live close to her. You know, like when we were in China, that was one of the ways that we would keep up with supporters was email. And for my wife, she would put pictures on Instagram of our kids so that family and friends could see what we're doing. And you know, technology blessed us in that way. And so she was very real, like, look, technology is a tool, but it's not supposed to disciple our kids. And so I appreciate that about her. And the other thing, too, is that she's very hopeful for the teens today. She's very hopeful. And she talks about what teenagers are like now based on, she has a PhD in this. She runs a nonprofit for kids. on how, like, you know, helping to disciple kids. Again, I can show you the book later if you want to check it out. But I like it because, you know, she's very hopeful for the teenagers, for the next generation. And she's like, man, this generation is passionate. Mm-hmm. This generation is connected. This generation wants to help. But this is where technology can take them and make it go awry. But this is where you can help them and guide them, you know. And she paints a clear picture that's sobering, but that's not all bad. And then the last thing I like about it is that she, instead of pointing fingers at teenagers or kids, she points at a bigger picture at the ones who have the power to do something about it, mainly the parents, you know. So, you know, she says, like, if so she breaks down the teenagers and she breaks down the lies that the kids are learning through technology. You know, one of them is like, I deserve to be happy. And how technology, how TikTok, social media feeds into those lies and how we can stand against that. You know, one thing she says, like, is, you know, complaining and negativity. It is like, yeah, like teenagers can complain a lot and, you know, they are self-centered, but guess what? That's part of being a teenager. That's part of growing up, you know? And it's like,
because at the time when, you know, it's identity formation, right?
Right.
So they're supposed to be, that's part of their maturity is, you know, growing into adulthood and finding out who they are, right? And so part of that is recognizing, like, okay, who am I that's different than who my parents are?
Right, yeah. Right?
So there is an aspect for them of standing up for their own identity, right? And that's natural. That's how it was, that's how it was designed. But how do we frame that? How do we receive that too? Is it, and how do we help to guide that?
And that's what she points out, is that, like, yeah, teenagers are selfish, but there's a part of that that is built into the development, as what you're saying. Like, you know, like, teenagers were selfish before technology. You know, just technology kind of exacerbated and molded it in ways that were different from us growing up. And she says, like, guess what? If you grew up during this generation, you would not be any better, which is very sobering. Like, yeah, you're right. Like, I shouldn't point the finger and be like, this generation. And she's like, but if you, the parents, know, what can you do? And so, like, one of the things even about negativity is, like, you know, talking about complaining. And she's like, how much do you complain in your household? Do you complain about your job in front of your kids? Do you complain about another person in front of your kids? Because guess what? When you do, you're discipling them. You know, like, are you feeding into the lie for them that you deserve to be happy? When you're stuck in traffic, they're going to watch you, how you respond, and they're going to learn from you. And so, you know, like, and she gives really good advice, practical advice on how to minimize screen time. Some of which, like, I'm going to start recommending to families. Like, one of them is, like, choose a screen-free day throughout the week and a screen-free weekend where, like, you just don't have, you know, any screens. But she says the parents have to do it too, you know. And she says for some people that's the hardest part. Is for the parents to be like, okay, we're all doing it. I got to be off.
No, for sure. And I think that's something that is not, kind of like you said, that's normal in a lot of households, right? And that's something that we grew up with too. It's like, do as I say, not as I do, right? But it's like, that, how much has that worked, right? And so it's like, if we're going to really try to lead our kids in some of these different things, it's like, we got to be the first ones to step in and say, yeah, we're going to do it first, right? And they'll follow our lead.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's cool to see just the different ways that you're talking about this discipleship, right? It's like we said before, you know, parents are the main spiritual leaders of our kids, but where are we leading them to, right? So are we leading them towards the Lord? Are we leading them somewhere else by our actions and what we're doing, right? So if we're always on the screen, then are we leading our kids to being on the screen all the time, right? And it's just because that's part of being a kid, is seeing what our parents do, and that's just how the Lord designed it, right? And so, yeah, I really appreciate some of the things that you're talking about, because I think some of these things are, I wouldn't say easy steps, but they're good first steps, right? It's like, okay, I need to recognize first, like, I'm on my screen too much before I start telling my kids they're on their screen too much, right? And things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I personally don't think I'm on my phone a lot, but if you ask my kids, like, hey, is daddy on his phone a lot? They're going to say yes, actually, which is sobering for me. Like, okay, they think I'm on my phone a lot. I need to, you know, that's something, you know, my wife and I talked about when we go back to Texas, is let's start a screen-free day. What day do we want it to be? Is that Monday, Tuesday? You know, obviously I'm at work and I'm on my computer. I need to reply to emails, but you know, at least a weekend that we can say to the kids, like, hey, this is our screen free day. This is what we're going to do instead of that. Invite boredom of like, okay, if you're bored, these are things that you can do, because you know, those periods of rest for our brain is really good for us to kind of grow, especially for the brains to, not have that overload of information coming through screens.
Yeah. And I actually saw a recent study on boredom specifically, where they talked about it's important for us to be bored because that's where our creativity stems from, right? It's like when we're bored, then our mind starts to wander and our mind starts to be creative and we start to use our imagination more and things like that. Where if we're constantly bombarded by information, whether it's through screens, music, just different things, then we're not giving our brain the opportunity to be creative and to imagine.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's an opportunity for us to grow in those times. So boredom is actually a good thing because it gives our brain space to create. And, you know, being made in the image of God, and God is the ultimate creator, right? It's like if we're not stepping into our creativity, and it doesn't have to be creativity necessarily in terms of like being artistic or things like that, like, you could be creative in being a math professor and how you teach math, right? Like there's different areas where not traditionally thought of as creative, you can be creative in them. But boredom can be a really good thing for our brain.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's how, again, as you said, that's how God designed that, from through those periods of rest is when your brain makes connections before that, you know, weren't there before, and having that time of just calm, you know, like Bible says, be still, right? Be still and know that I'm God. That's good for us. I mean, some of my best ideas come during staff meetings. well, I'm kidding.
We're not supposed to throw people under the bus, Samson. You're just flat out saying that staff meetings are boring.
No, I'm not gifted administratively. Let's just say that. So when we talk about, you know.
Just messing. Yeah, so I think it's really cool just to see, you know, how aligned our hearts are in terms of this area especially, and in the ways that, you know, the Lord has been leading you, the Lord has been speaking to you. You know, as a parent, it's always cool to see, you know, see someone else speaking the same thing to my kids. So then it's like, see, they're hearing it from someone else. So that's like confirmation, right? And so it's cool to see the ways that the Lord has been leading you, especially in this area, that are very aligned with ours. Cause it's just like, okay, we're going in the right direction. You know, the things that we're talking about, the ways that we're moving, like we're going in the right direction. Yeah. Like the Lord is speaking the same thing to someone that's doing ministry in Texas. Right. And so it's like, okay, yeah, the Lord is really in this. The Lord is really leading this, and we're hearing him correctly.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's, you definitely, it's always good to have that confirmation, that affirmation of like, all right, this is where the Lord is leading us as his sheep. You know, if he's leading us as a sheep, you know, with a herd, that means other sheep should be going there as well. Mm-hmm. If you're the only sheep going there, then maybe that's something you should really just wait and pray and seek God in, you know, before moving forward anymore.
All right. Well, Samson, we're running a little bit on time. So I wanted to give you a chance before, you know, we end this episode to just share if there's anything that you'd like to, like a lasting impression that you'd like to leave with our congregation. If there's something that you feel like the Lord's really been highlighting to you that, you know, you'd like to share with us. I think it would be really awesome to.
Well, I was just curious about, you said something about how you guys did a serve series, or what was that about? Tell me more about that. How's that going? What was the goal of that? And have you guys seen that goal met?
Yeah, so for us as a church, you know, I would say that kind of the heart in our church for since we started is we're really a grace-filled church, right? So it's not like, okay, you have to do this, you have to do that, you have to do this, right? But we're also recognizing that as we have our new facility, as we're, you know, just more things are going on at church, that we do need a little bit more manpower to be able to get things done, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, our children's ministries are growing, right? we have more kids there. So it's like, okay, we have more kids. So now we're actually going to have add an extra class. Well, if we have an extra class, well, we need more people to help serve, right? And so just recognizing that with our own facility, there's extra volunteer needs, right? And so part of the reason for doing this series is to, you know, encourage people to be able to see just some of the different needs that we have now that we're growing, but then also to see, like, we're actually falling in the footsteps of our Lord, right?
Yeah,
because he's a servant. And so part of it was just to help shape the attitude and things like that behind serving, but then also to recognize, like, yeah, as a church, we're growing, we're in a new season. And so, you know, to encourage people to step into serving in a new way.
Yeah.
Because we've never really made a lot of pushes to be like, you have to do this, you have to do, you have to serve, you have to. But, you know, like I said, the heart of our church is really grace. So we really wanted to make sure it was framed in the right way. So it's not like, okay, we're getting you to serve out of obligation, but it's really like, no, we're getting you to serve because this is what the Lord is calling us to, this new season, and here's all the different opportunities, and we want to come at it from the right heart,
yeah,
not just from, you know, the obligation side.
Yeah. I think I want to speak into that. I want to just affirm that, because at our church, I came up with a slogan for a church where people get connected. Like, what do we want a newcomer to be a member? What does it look like to be a member? And the slogan that the Lord gave to us, I believe, was find your people, find your purpose. Find your people, you know, as a life groups pastor, your community, those who walk alongside you, those who have your back. Like, if you're not going to go to church for a couple of weeks, who's going to call you and be like, hey, where you been? Or for mm-hmm. you, who are you calling? You know, like, who are you reaching out to? It's not always about you,
mm-hmm.
right? It's about who you're influencing. And then find your purpose. Because, you know, we were called to be a body,
mm-hmm.
right? The passages, I think, in Romans 12, right? I've been meditating on Romans 12, 1. Present yourselves as a living sacrifice,
mm-hmm.
Holy and acceptable to God. Then it calls to, like, serving the different grace and gifts that you're called to, you know, to serve cheerfully, mm-hmm. is what it says in Romans. If you lead diligently,
mm-hmm.
If you give generously, right? So all those different ways. And I know it sounds obligatory, but the thing is like, if God asks us to do something, it's because it's for our good.
Mm-hmm.
It's for our good. It's because there's joy there. And to really press into that. It's like when I trying to make my son work out to run with me. He hates it. He hates running. And sorry, Toby, if you're listening to this, you should run more, okay? But I try to cast that vision of, like, I'm doing this because this is for your good. Mm. That the more you do it, like, you might not like it right now, but this is going to pay dividends. This is going to really bring you life. And this is going to help you enjoy the things you like to do more. You know, we were not created to have a life of just being served and sitting and just listening once a week on Sundays. It's not how God meant to call you as a Christian. You are meant to be part of a body where you serve. You know, it's better to give than to receive.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that serving is part of that. So press into that is what I want to encourage your people, because there's life there. Mm-hmm. There's joy there. There's blessing in stepping into serving.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of like what I said about serving overseas, it, you know, people saw it as a sacrifice, but it was not a sacrifice. Mm-hmm. When we're doing it, it was a joy. And I would say the same thing about serving. And then the other thing is, like, for our church, I feel like when people don't serve, one thing they say is, like, I don't know where to start. Mm-hmm. I don't know what my spiritual gifts are. And I would say, just start somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, the analogy I like to use is like playing soccer for the first time. You know, if you've never played soccer, right, and you join a soccer team, the coach isn't going to be like, hey, what are you good at? Like, mm-hmm. are you a goalie? Are you a striker? Are you a defender? It's like, no, I've never played. I don't know what my mm-hmm. my skills are. Like, you know, the coach would just say, go play. Go play. And as you play, you start learning more about what you're good at,
mm-hmm.
where you're at. And that's what the coach is for, to say, hey, maybe you're not a goalie. What about, you know, like, be a defender. I think you're better than this. This is your mm-hmm. gifting. And that's our role as pastors, to see, like, where God is leading you and say, like, you know, you've been serving in this way. I really see this in you. Maybe this is where you should be, you know? So if you don't know your spiritual gifts, if you don't know where you should serve, start somewhere. And as you serve, you'll find that the Lord will tell you, will reveal to you, you know? Like, maybe you tried children's ministry. And after 2 months, you're just dead tired. Like, man, you know, you don't, kids are crying in your class the whole time and you're stressed. Maybe children's ministry isn't for you, which children's ministry is great. I love it. Okay. I would recommend children's ministry to anybody. Great place to start.
Did our children's director pay you to say that?
but really, you know, like you got to just get started somewhere. And so those are my two encouragements, like serve because that's where life and joy is. And it's a blessing to serve and you got to start somewhere. So just do it.
I think it's funny that you talk about it like that, because I just had a similar conversation in my small group, but it wasn't regarding serving. It was regarding spiritual gifts even, right? Because I think there, you know, a lot of the spiritual gifts assessments that are out there, you have to have kind of tried them out in order to see
exactly,
if you actually
yeah,
have it, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, and especially, okay, so I will share this too. When I was in seminary, I had a professor who's told me the gifts of the Spirit are no longer available, right? But we're in a church that's on the more charismatic side, right? And so
is our church.
So we're experiencing, right? We're in a season where we're having healing services once a month, where people are praying for God to heal them, and we're seeing God healing people, right? And so for me, I was like, okay, how do I reconcile that? My eyes are seeing, and this mm-hmm. is what my teacher is saying. So if I'm someone that grew up under this teacher and not seeing these things beforehand, then I might think, okay, the gifts of the Spirit, they're not available. Or I might not even be aware of them because they're not teaching about them at all.
Yeah.
Right. And so how am I going to know if the Lord has gifted me in that way if I've never even tried, right? So if I've never tried to pray for healing, how do I know if I have the gift of healing? Or if I've never tried to pray in tongues, how do I know if I have the gift of tongues? If I've never even heard someone speak tongues, how do I know if I have the gift of interpretation of tongues, right? Just different things like that. If we don't even think or know that they're available, we're never going to test out saying, this is what you have.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and going off of spiritual gifts too, you know, what is the purpose of spiritual gifts, right? It's for the building and encouraging. It's building up of the body,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's for those who are actively participating in the building up the body, AKA, let's call it serving,
mm-hmm.
then you're going to start seeing your spiritual gifts manifest that mm-hmm. you wouldn't if you're just sitting back. I mean, the biggest example is the gift of teaching,
mm-hmm.
right? How do you know somebody has a gift of teaching?
Yep.
If they have to teach in front of people, right? Like nobody sees that, oh, I have the gift of teaching by sitting back away from the church and not serving.
Mm-hmm.
Usually the teachers who are gifted in that way have served, have spoken up, have encouraged others, you know, maybe in a Bible study one-on-one where they say, hey, this is a passage I'm reading. This is what it means. And I want to encourage you with this. And from there, you know, people start recognizing like, wow, this person really blessed me and encouraged me with this passage. Maybe mm-hmm. he has a gift of teaching. So that's, yeah, spiritual gifts. It's for the body.
Yeah. And so kind of bottom line is you got to go out there and you got to try it out, right? You got to test it out.
Right. Yeah. Look, Nike didn't pay us, but just do it.
Right? All right. Well, it's been a lot of fun, Samson. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for being our guest this week. Anytime you're in town, you're always welcome to come back on. So just really appreciate you and sharing your life and sharing your stories with us. I feel like there's going to be a lot of people that are really encouraged by the things that you had to say today.
Well, praise God. And yeah, if there's anything that wasn't encouraging, I apologize in advance. So.
All right. Well, thanks again. And thanks to all the listeners out there. We appreciate you. Without you guys, we wouldn't have this podcast and have these opportunities to have some of these really fun, really awesome conversations. So thanks again. And until next time, may you experience God's heart for you to flourish in every season.